and walked back to the great house, Tradescant a step behind the greatest man in the kingdom, respectfully attentive, but looking from side to side at every pace. There were things that wanted doing in the garden, but then there were always things that wanted doing in the garden. The avenue of pleached limes needed retying before their early summer growth thrust wands of twigs out of control. The kitchen garden needed digging over. The radishes, leeks, and onions should be sown into the warming spring soil. The great watercourses, which were the wonder of Theobald's palace, needed weeding and cleaning, but he strolled, as if he had all the time in the world, one step behind his master, waiting in silence, in case his master wanted to talk. "I did right," Sir Robert said, half to himself, half to his gardener. "The old queen was dying, and she had no heir with as strong a claim as he. Not one fit to rule, that is. She would not hear his name. You had to whisper King James of Scotland if she were anywhere in any of her palaces. But all the reports I had of him were of a man who could hold two kingdoms, and perhaps even weld them together. And he had sons and a daughter. There'd be no more fretting over heirs. And he's a good Christian, no taint of papistry. They breed strong Protestants in Scotland." He paused for a moment and gazed at his great palace set on the high terrace looking towards the River Thames. "I don't complain," he said fairly. "I've been well repaid for my work, and there's more to come." He smiled at his gardener. "I'm to be Baron Cecil of Essendon." Tradescant beamed. "I'm glad for you." Sir Robert nodded. "A rich reward for a hard task?" He hesitated. "Sometimes I felt disloyal. I wrote him letter after letter, teaching him the way of our country, preparing him to rule. And she never knew. She'd have had me beheaded if she had known. She'd have called it treason. Towards the end, she called it treason, even to mention his name. But he had to be prepared." Sir Robert broke off, and John Tradescant watched him with silent sympathy. His master often strolled into the garden to find him. Sometimes they spoke of the grounds, the formal garden, the orchards, the park, of seasonal plantings or some new plants. Sometimes Sir Robert spoke at length, indiscreetly, knowing that Tradescant could keep a secret, that he was a man without guile, with solid loyalty. Sir Robert had made Tradescant his own, as effectively as if the gardener had gone down on the loam and sworn an oath of fealty on the day that he had trusted him with the garden of Theobald's palace. It had been a massive task for a 24-year-old, but Sir Robert had taken the gamble that Tradescant could do it. He was a young man himself, desperate to inherit his father's position at court, desperate for older and more powerful men to recognise his merit and his skill. He took a risk with Tradescant, and then the Queen took a risk with him. Now, 6 years later, both of them had learned their craft, statesmanship and gardening, and Tradescant was Sir Robert's man through and through. "She wanted him left ignorant," Sir Robert said. "She knew what would happen to her court if she named him as heir. They'd have all slipped away from her, slipped away up the great north road to Edinburgh, and she'd have died alone, knowing herself to be an old woman, an ugly old woman with no kin, no lovers, no friends. I owed it to her to keep them at her beck and call to the very end. But I owed it to him to teach him as best I could, even at a distance. It was to be his kingdom. He had to learn how to govern it, and there was no one but me to teach him."
"And he knows now?" John asked, going to the very heart of it.
Sir Robert was alert. "Why do you ask? Is there gossip that he does not?" John shook his head.
"I've heard none," he said. "But he's not a lad who has sprung up from nowhere. He must have his own way of doing things. He's a man grown, and he has his own kingdom. I was wondering if he would take your teaching, especially now that he will have his pick of advice. And it matters—"
He broke off, and his master waited for him to finish.
"When you have a lord or a king," John went on, choosing his words with caution, "you have to be sure that he knows what he's doing, because he's going to be the one who decides what you do."